Not really. I went to try it on, but Emma, there was a man in there.
A man?
I told customer service, but they said, it's our policy.
What?
Target allows men into women's restrooms and changing areas. The American Family Association is calling for a boycott of Target until they reverse this misguided policy. Sign the pledge at AFA.net.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
American Family News, I'm Steve Pugh. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the Trump administration is still investigating the origins of the coronavirus, Rachel Sutherland reports.
Again accusing China of covering up the severity of the coronavirus, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told reporters intelligence officials are still looking into whether it escaped from a lab in Wuhan.
We don't have certainty, and there is significant evidence that this came from the laboratory. Those statements can both be true. I've made them both. Administration officials have made them. They're all true.
China claims the U.S. has no evidence to support the theory that COVID-19 got out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, said this week the exact origin of the virus remains unknown and that the weight of evidence suggests it was not man-made. Rachel Sutherland, Fox News.
Cities continue to push the idea of a ban on natural gas and natural gas appliances as a way of combating so-called man-made climate change. But Chris Woodward spoke to someone who believes this is wrong-headed.
Nick Loris, an economist focusing on energy issues for the Heritage Foundation, says this is problematic for a number of reasons.
One is it would be extremely costly and burdensome for families to have to pay to get new appliances, not to mention running them on natural gas has been cheaper and saved households money, as well as businesses. Secondly, it's a big consumer choice issue. There's a reason that a lot of folks like cooking on natural gas. It's because it heats the food evenly, it cooks rather quickly, and so there's just a pleasantness that comes with cooking with natural gas that people tend to like.
Meanwhile, Laura says the environmental health benefits are questionable, especially in terms of reducing CO2 and greenhouse gas emissions.
This has been a big climate push now from a number of the more progressive cities. And natural gas is one of the reasons why we've seen a dramatic countrywide decrease in greenhouse gas emissions. And so in terms of being eco-friendly, a lot of these appliances are better off than electric counterparts.
In July of last year, Berkeley, California became the first municipality in the nation to ban natural gas in new buildings. City Council member Kate Harrison told NPR at that time that we need to tackle climate change every way that we can, and by doing this, we're not asking people to change that much.
Tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer, and organizers say they will plead with God for healing for this land. More from Steve Jordahl.
National Day of Prayer has been observed the first Thursday in May since 1952, but Task Force member Bishop Harry Jackson says there may never have been a more timely one.
We're praying because of these severe circumstances, but it's safe to say we've never had a National Day of Prayer like this before.
The theme this year is Pray God's Glory Across the Earth, and the theme verse is Habakkuk 2:14, "For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea."
What would it look like if, A, America turns to God? And then I believe that we're crying out, really, for the mercy of God to be upon the land.
In addition to the thousands of local observations across America, the live national telecast
will take place May 7th, Thursday, from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. It will be broadcast and streamed and posted in many ways, including Facebook Live and on television on GOT TV, Daystar, and Brio TV, and others.
You can find a local event near you at nationaldayofprayer.org. I'm Steve Jordahl.
U.S. businesses cut an unprecedented 20.2 million jobs in April, an epic collapse with a coronavirus outbreak panic closing the offices, factories, schools, construction sites, and stores that propel the U.S. economy. The report today from payroll company ADP showed the tragic depth and scale of job losses that left no part of the world's largest economy unscathed. For American Family News, I'm Rusty Pugh.
The COVID pandemic has been hard on marriages, but help is on the way. This weekend on Encouragement Live, Dr. Greg Smalley, Vice President of Marriage at Focus on the Family, and his wife Erin provide practical help for couples for these challenging times. This is Don Hawkins. Join us for Encouragement Live with Greg and Erin Smalley, Saturday at 7:05 Central, 8:05 Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. Hope everything is going well for all of you. Folks, we are following the circumstances and situations of that our country is facing right now with a microscope, looking at this very, very, very closely, because there are a lot of moving parts to this thing. And American Family Radio, I really believe, is the place where you can come and get the kind of information you're looking for and get it from a Christian perspective, from a biblical perspective. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for praying for us, supporting us, helping us. Tomorrow's the day of prayer, and we're going to spend some time even on this program, which is not a prayer program per se, but we're going to spend some time tomorrow in prayer. And trust all of you are ready for that, because our country needs prayer, folks, more than it needs anything else. I believe this, that while right now we are facing very, very severe financial and economic problems, that our problem is ultimately not economic. And that while we are facing a very severe health crisis in our country, that our problem is not ultimately a health problem. And while we are facing very, very serious political divisions in our country right now, that our problems are not ultimately political. I believe that the problems in the United States of America are ultimately spiritual, that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. And therefore, we have to put on the whole armor of God to be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And so, folks, having done all to stand, stand therefore. That's what we've got to do. We've got to do the things that we need to do economically and politically and to protect our health. Certainly, we've got to do those things. But the ultimate issue is spiritual. The ultimate forces that must be conquered in this situation are demonic forces. Now, those forces do use human beings, and that's why I've said repeatedly on this program, we hate bad ideas. We don't hate people, but we hate bad ideas. And it's appropriate to hate bad ideas, because bad ideas get people killed. Bad ideas cause all kinds of havoc in the earth. And so we've got to defeat bad ideas and lift up good ideas. One of the worst ideas that has infected our country from the very beginning, but it has grown very, very acutely over the last 50 years, since the 1960s, really 60 years, isn't it, since the 1960s, which is that there is no God. And that's really the central idea of the left. It's the central idea of leftist thinking. There is no God. And therefore, man is the ultimate arbiter of his own morality. And he is the ultimate determiner of what is right and what is wrong. And that the only thing that matters is science and what the left would call facts. Of course, we find out that only certain facts seem to matter, and often those are made-up facts. So we've been told repeatedly about this virus, follow the science, follow the science, follow the science. And yet we found out all along the way that the science is not at all settled, just like with climate change. You're told, shut up, that's settled science. The science has already spoken. And then when you begin to examine it, you realize, well, no, actually, the science really hasn't spoken, because what we've got is the politicizing of science so that you only get certain kinds of information that feed a certain kind of narrative, and anything that doesn't feed that narrative, perhaps censored, is not talked about. And I think that's part of the problem we're facing in solving this. I mean, as we open up, for example, we're being told all kinds of things as we begin to open up. There's going to be another surge. And one of the scientific facts, as I understand it, about epidemiology is that people develop herd immunity to viruses and other diseases. They develop herd immunity. How often have you heard that talked about by the experts who are giving us all this advice? Almost none. Almost none. The only thing we've heard is we've got to have a vaccine. That's all we've heard. Got to have a vaccine. But let's face it, folks, there are many diseases in the earth right now for which there is no vaccine. What we have, though, is immunity from it, because on some level we've been exposed to it, gotten it, our bodies developed antibodies to it, and our immune system simply resists it. You don't hear discussion of that at all. Well, there are some discussions that are arising that we hadn't had, and I said this is where this terrible tragedy, this pandemic, may have some silver linings in it, or at the very least, we will come out on the other side of this thing more fully conscious of the threats that we face. And one of those threats is communist China. You know, folks, and I think of myself as somebody who's fairly politically well-informed even before I was doing the program. I mean, I follow politics and follow policy, and not just domestic policy, follow foreign policy. And I have to tell you that for the last, since Nixon went to China, I was really just a kid then, but in all of our dealings through various presidencies with communist China, I've thought of China as on its way to becoming a free nation, on its way to becoming an open society, a capitalist society. I've got to be careful using open society. I think George Soros uses that phrase. But you know what I mean, becoming a society that recognizes individual liberty. That's what we've been told, right? That that's where they were moving, right? That's why their economy was growing. Well, we're now learning that that is absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. That is about as far from the truth as you can get. And it has never been true. Have there been debates within the Chinese hierarchy about the possibility of opening up the country and allowing principles of freedom to emerge? I think those debates have happened. Of course, the people who have led the debate arguing in favor of that are not in power. And by the way, their exit from power was ignominious. They didn't go gently into that good night. No, it is clear that the People's Republic of China is a confirmed totalitarian, authoritarian, communist state. And right now, anybody there, my understanding is anybody who dares suggest anything other than the narrative that the government is putting forward, which is America needs to shut up because this has nothing to do with China. America's trying to cover up for its own incompetence. This is a virus that was caused in nature. It did not come out of China. It did not come out of the Wuhan laboratories. This is an accident of nature, and Americans are just trying to cover up their own incompetence. Oh, they're pushing back hard. Well, if you were living in China and you say anything that's not consistent with that narrative, you've got a problem. But when we come back, we've got an expert on China who's going to talk to us, and I hope be able to enlighten us about just how misled we've been. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Should the rest of the country have to play by New York rules? Brett Stevens doesn't think so. He lives in New York City and writes for the New York Times, but he understands why most of America doesn't want to live under a national lockdown just because of how the virus pandemic has slammed New York. He begins by reminding us of the famous cover for The New Yorker with the title View of the World from 9th Avenue. Manhattan is in the foreground, there's a brownie strip called Jersey, and the rest of America is in the distance. He says that could almost be a map for the epidemic. When he wrote the column, there are more fatalities in Long Island's Nassau County with a population of 1.4 million than in all of California with a population of 40 million. There were more fatalities in Westchester County, 989, than in Texas, 611. Virus deaths per 100,000 in New York City were more than 16 times what could be found in America's next largest city, Los Angeles. Why so many infections and deaths in New York City? Well, it has the highest population density among U.S. cities of 100,000 or more. Commuters crowd trains, office workers crowd elevators, diners crowd restaurants. No other city has the same kind of jam pedestrian life as New York. He understands why so much of the country is ready to open up and has dwindling sympathy for lockdown conditions that may still be necessary for New York City for the near future. He also acknowledges that his argument goes against his personal interest. He believes people in safe suburban neighborhoods should not be prevented from returning to their jobs just because he and others choose to live, travel, and work in what he calls urban sardine cans. That's why we should not have to play by New York rules. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Socialism, go to viewpoints.info/socialism. That's viewpoints.info/socialism.
Death before sin? This is Ken Ham, CEO of the Apologetics Ministry of Answers in Genesis and Ark Encounter. Many Christians believe that God could have used millions of years to create the world. But many haven't thought through what this actually means. You see, the idea of millions of years comes from an interpretation of the fossil record. Now, that's a record of the death, disease, and extinction of animals. So saying God used millions of years is saying God used death and suffering to create. But the Bible says God's creation was perfect. Death and suffering are consequences of sin and the curse. They're our fault because of our sin in Adam and our continued sin. God didn't use millions of years to create the world. We need to trust what God's word says, not man.
There's so much more to discover when you visit our award-winning website at AnswersRadio.com and subscribe for free daily email insights from Ken Ham at AnswersRadio.com.
Ryan Fisher here. The lab in China that produced coronavirus is applying for a patent on remdesivir so the same lab can make billions off the so-called cure. Two cops get coronavirus from arresting an illegal alien. A hair salon operator in Texas goes to jail over coronavirus. And 20% of all the Wendy's in America have run out of hamburger. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. Folks, I have been looking forward to this moment. My guest is Stephen W. Mosher. He is the author of Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. Stephen, welcome to The Awakening.
It's good to be back with you, Bishop Jackson.
Well, it's great to have you. So listen, I've read your book, as I've said, and it was an eye-opener for me. And I hope every American reads this book because we really need to understand China. Would you start by telling us, what do you think, first of all, is lacking in America's understanding and Americans' understanding of China? What have we thought versus what the reality is? I know that's a big, broad question, but I think your book kind of addresses that. So if you could summarize that for us.
Well, here's what we thought. We thought that after the debacle, the disaster of the Cultural Revolution and the famine after the Great Leap Forward in the early 60s, where 42.5 million people died, that the Chinese people were ready for a change, that the Communist Party would realize that that it had been a disaster, visited a disaster, in fact, multiple disasters on the Chinese people, and it itself might be ready to reform. That's the idea that we had in 1979 when we normalized relations with China.
I was the first American social scientist in the door. I was in a Chinese town by March of 1980, looking to see what life was like on the ground. And I must say, Bishop Jackson, the people there did not like the Chinese Communist Party and were hoping for reform, not just economic reform to make their lives better in a material sense, but political reform as well, where the party would come to respect human rights, where eventually they would move from local elections, which they had started in 1980, up to county elections and prefectural elections and provincial elections, and finally national elections. That was the hope. That hope died. That hope died in June 4th of 1989 in Tiananmen Square when the People's Liberation Army, under the direction of Communist Party leaders, shot down unarmed students and demonstrators in the streets of the capital city. These were the best and the brightest of the China's young generation. They killed 10,000 on that day. And the next day, they killed another 20 or 25,000 because they came to all the hospitals and loaded all the wounded, all the ones who'd been shot but not fatally, onto army trucks and took them to an undisclosed location. None of the wounded ever came back. They were destroying the evidence. I knew from that point in time that China was going in the wrong direction. And yet, for the last 29 years, our policy has still been based on the idea that the Chinese Communist Party would gradually evolve and eventually China would become just like us. Instead, what we've found is more and more enablers and collaborators on our side of the Pacific helping China to become wealthy and powerful, helping it to build up its military so it now has the second most effective military in the world and the second largest economy. We have enabled the rise of the country that wants to destroy the United States of America. I think this is the biggest geostrategic blunder in human history.
Wow. And that's a big statement. If that's the biggest strategic blunder for the United States of America, we better be taking some corrective measures quickly. So tell me this. Why do you think we've made this blunder? I mean, to what extent is it influenced by money? To what extent is it influenced by naivete or sympathy with sort of the collectivist ideology? What's driving it? Because you've known this a lot longer than most Americans have, and yet the politicians don't seem to have sought out people like you or taken your advice. And as far as I know, President Trump is the first president I've heard to even begin to talk aggressively about competing with China and about the fact that they were, to put it maybe in his way, eating our lunch.
Yeah, he is. God bless him for that, because we'd be in much worse shape today if he had not been in office the last 3 years, beginning the process of weaning us off made in China goods by putting tariffs on those cheap Chinese goods, which are only cheap because the workers in China aren't free to organize a labor union or strike for higher wages or even engage in a worker slowdown for better working conditions. The rate of industrial accidents in China is the highest in the world. Human life is cheap. And if you protest the conditions, if you protest the air pollution, the water pollution, the mistreatment of workers, the police come out and beat you up. And if you continue to protest, of course, you get arrested, sent away to a secret jail where you can be kept, well, forever, and no one knows where you are or what they're doing to you. So, you know, this is the secret behind the cheap price of made-in-China goods. But why have we been in this situation now? Why have we gotten ourselves in this situation? Well, Wall Street financiers, you know, the big banks like Chase Morgan, have been making money off China for the last 30 years. A lot of Chinese state-owned companies are listed on Western stock exchanges, which enables them to raise hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars from American investors. That goes to fund the rise of China and to help build up its military. And then we have the lobbyists in Washington who work for the Fortune 500 companies, the American companies, who thought when they went into China they would make huge profits. You know what they found out, Bishop Jackson, is they got to China, they were squeezed dry of their technology, and then for the most part, they were squeezed back out of China. So a lot of Fortune 500 companies have also been ripped off, and the theft of intellectual property, the FBI estimates that $600 billion dollars, that's billion with a B, that's real money, has been stolen from the United States in intellectual property every year for the last 15, 20 years. You know, you add that up over time, that's trillions and trillions of dollars that they've stolen from us. So you have the lying about signing a trade deal, which they haven't abided by. You have the cheating of World Health Trade Organization requirements, and you have the stealing of U.S. intellectual property by a hooker, by a crook. But the Wall Street financiers, the lobbyists, that pretty much own China policy until the last 3 years. That's why all we got from the Obama administration and the Bush administration and the Clinton administration was toothless rhetoric. We would talk tough, but we wouldn't do anything. And I think now we're fortunately in a better situation because the China virus has woken up Main Street. It's woken up people who normally wouldn't pay much attention to China policy to the threat from China. So public opinion in the U.S. has shifted dramatically against China. And I think Trump will enjoy support to begin with for bringing industry back to the U.S. We're opening factories here instead of China for trying to increase the wages of workers here. But now he's going to have even more massive public support as he begins to take action against China. So I really think this is a watershed moment. And even many of those in Congress who'd rather let China go with the slap on the wrist for having killed and infected us, I think we'll be forced to go along. So this is our moment. If we don't seize it now, we might as well all start, learning Chinese.
Well, look, one of the things in the book that I found fascinating that I had just absolutely no clue about. I mean, I understand, I think, communism pretty well. I knew China was a communist country, and we may not have a chance to get into this until we come back after the break. But one of the things that you point out in the book is that there is a long history in China of some practices that we in America would find abhorrent. I mean, a long history of totalitarianism, a long history of absolute godlike rules by emperors, a long history of absolute dictatorial control over people, and a long history of the sense that there is this Chinese superiority that gives them in some way this justification for ruling the world, that nobody else should be as I think you put it in the book, nobody else should be the world hegemon but China. And here again, that's history that is available to people, and yet it's as if we bought into the kind of, you know, that Joe Biden said it not too long ago. These are good folks. These are just good folks. I mean, they're kind of just like us, when in fact they really don't like America seeming to be the giant bestriding the world. They want that role for themselves. I mean, do I essentially have that right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, China, the word China in Chinese consists of two characters, which mean middle kingdom, the kingdom at the center of the earth. So for over 2,000 years, China's rulers have had the conceit to think they rule over the most important part of the planet. Of course, to the north, they had the tundra, the frozen wasteland of Siberia. To the east, they had Japan, and then the vast stretches of the Pacific. To the south, they had small countries easily dominated. To the west, they had deserts. So they dominated their part of the world. So they've gotten used to thinking of themselves as the world's hegemon. And the world got a lot larger a few hundred years ago, of course, when Western explorers began to land on China's shores, and it sort of dethroned them. But, yeah, the Chinese Communist Party would like to be the world's hegemon. It would like to bestride the world as the colossus, and it would like the rest of the world to kowtow to it. And, you know, people need to understand what a kowtow is. When you came before the imperial throne, which is very high up in the air, you had to kneel down and bang your head on the floor loud enough to be heard by the emperor sitting up on his throne. And you had to do that not just once, but three times. And again, three times. Wow. And three times more. By the time you got done, you were ready to agree to anything he would order you to do.
Well, Stephen, hold it. Hold your thought right there. We got to take a quick break, and we'll come right back to continue our discussion with Stephen Mosher, author of Bully of Asia.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
Several years ago, I ran across what is to me one of the most beautiful stories I've ever heard. Maybe you are familiar with it, maybe not. I still want to pass it along. A fellow by the name of G.W. Rosenberry told it. He's dead now, but the story lives. Dr. Rosenberry was riding a train across the state to attend a conference. There were few people on the train, and he couldn't keep from noticing a young man who seemed very nervous. Everyone seemed to notice how restless and tense he was. He'd take a seat, sit for a moment, get up, and move. Finally, Dr. Rosenberry went over to where the young man was, sat down beside him, and spoke. "Do you have trouble, son? Is something bothering you? I would certainly like to be of help if I can." The young man looked at Dr. Rosenberry for a moment and then spoke. "Well, I don't mind telling you," he said. "Do you know where Springvale is?" Dr. Rosenberry answered, "Isn't it the next stop?" The young man spoke again. "Yes, sir. We'll be there in a few moments. That's my home. I lived there until 3 years ago. My mother and father live there still. But 3 years ago, I had a quarrel with my father. I told him he'd never see me again. I packed my bags and left. It's been hard during the past 3 years. Many times I've wanted to go back. I wrote Mother often. I wrote her last week and told her I'd be passing through. I told her I'd like to stop for a moment if it was all right with Daddy. I told her that if Daddy said it was all right for them to hang something white outside the house, and I could see it when the train passed. I told her not to do it unless Daddy agreed. She'd do it anyway, you know." Well, there was a period of quietness. The boy looked out the window. Then the terrain became familiar. The train was nearing the house where his parents lived. He spoke to Dr. Rosenberry excitedly. "Mister, would you look for me? It's the next house, just around this bend. I just can't look. If there isn't something white, I just can't look." Well, the train slowed for the curve and jerked a bit, stopping for the water tank. Nearly forgetting everything, Dr. Rosenberry just about shouted, "Look, son, look!" The little farmhouse was there amid the trees, but you could hardly see it for the white. The parents had taken everything white they could get their hands on and hung it out on the hillside. Every sheet, bedspread, towel, sock, handkerchief, everything white they could find was hung on that hillside. The boy became very nervous and pale. His fingers gripped the cheap suitcase. He was out of the car before it had completely stopped. The last the passengers saw of him, he was running up the hill to his home as fast as his feet would carry him. It's an ageless story. Remember how he told it? But while he was yet at a distance, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. The white sheets are still out, and so many need to come home.
This has been My Turn with Don Weilman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Folks, we're back with Stephen W. Mosher. The book is Bully of Asia. Stephen, as we ended the last segment, you were telling us about this. So this expression, kowtowing, comes from what people used to have to do before the Chinese emperor and bang their heads three times so loud on the ground that it could be heard. That was the practice?
That was the practice. And you can see from that practice how the Chinese people had to abase themselves, how they had to lower themselves before the majesty of the Chinese emperor. And to bang your head on the floor, stone floor of the Great Hall of, not the Great Hall of the People in the Forbidden City, you had to do it three times three. So you had to do it nine times. You practically had to knock yourself out to show as a sign of respect for the emperor. Wow. And he was a godlike figure. And moving fast forward to today, basically Xi Jinping is considered to be at least in his eyes and in the eyes of the Chinese Communist Party, to have godlike powers. People are supposed to abase themselves before him in the same way. They don't kowtow anymore, of course, but they have his little red book of sayings on their bookshelf, and they have to memorize them. They have his app, the Xi Jinping app, on their phone, and they have to study the Xi Jinping app on their phone and memorize his sayings for 20 minutes every day, and then answer questions correctly in order to stay in the good graces of the Chinese Communist Party. So he's everywhere. You get in a taxi in Beijing, and they've got a little medallion with Xi Jinping hanging from the rearview mirror as if he's the patron saint of road safety. It's a personality cult. It's totally out of control. It makes him into a not just a larger-than-life figure, but a kind of semi-deity, at least in his eyes. And that's really what we can say about the whole country of China. In the view of the Chinese Communist Party, China is supposed to be the church of the Chinese Communist Party. The acolytes are Communist Party members, and the head of the church is Xi Jinping, General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party himself. That's why they hate religion, Bishop Jackson. That's why they're attacking Christians and Catholics, and not just that, the Taoists and Buddhists and Muslims. Everybody is having their churches torn down, their shrines destroyed, because there can only be one religion in China, and that's the religion of the Chinese Communist Party, and only one leader of that sect, which is to say Xi Jinping himself. So this goes a long way back in Chinese history, and it's as if, you know, these archaic practices have come back to life in China. It's a real step backward.
And, you know, Stephen, the thing that really grabs me when you give us that description is that you would never think that when you see Xi Jinping in his Western suit and his red tie and shaking hands with the president. I mean, he just looks like a normal leader of a big country as who's here, and he's non-threatening. And what you've just described is something very different than what the image is that's put forward, which brings us to another point that you talk about in the book, which is this deeply ingrained sense that deception and mm-hmm. the misleading of one's enemy is an important part of statecraft.
Absolutely. Deception is key to Chinese strategy in war and in peace. Know the enemy and know yourself, and you will win 100 victories in 100 battles, the ancient strategist Sun Tzu said. But he also said the highest expertise in war is winning the war without firing a shot. And that's exactly what they've been trying to do to us for the last 25 years. They've been trying to win a war against the United States without firing a shot, by stealing our technology, by signing agreements that they violate before the ink is dry on the paper, by conducting, you know, massive espionage efforts in the United States, by recruiting American scientists like the Harvard University professor Charles Lieber secretly to go to China and take all of his cutting-edge research to China. That's happened hundreds of times. So it's by hook or by crook, by any means possible. They say 10,000 methods and 100 strategies. That means in Chinese, by any means possible, they are determined to overtake us, and not just overtake us, but subdue us. China's idea of the way the world should be organized is China should be the center of the world. All industrial production should be moved to China, so China would be the only country making things. And the rest of the world would simply meekly buy Chinese products and supply China with the agricultural products and the raw materials that China needs to feed its people and its industrial machine. That's their view of the world of the future. And, you know, Bishop, it's not a world that I or I want my children or my grandchildren to have to live in.
Is that what this saying that you use in the second chapter of the book, you quote Confucius, just as there are not two suns in the sky, so there cannot be two emperors on earth. That China's view is there can't be China and America equal. There has to be China in charge and America subdued or subjugated.
Yes, that's what, you know, Chinese view of hegemony is. A hegemon was an ancient Greek ruler who was, you know, first among equals. But the hegemon of China would be the ruler of the entire world. directly and indirectly. It would be what we call a unipolar world, not a multipolar world with several great powers, but a unipolar world with only one pole, one axis of power, and that polar axis would be China itself. That's the goal. It's been the goal since China declared a Cold War on us in 1991. And people say, what? China declared Cold War on us back in 1991? Absolutely. The precursor to Xi Jinping, Deng Xiaoping, called together his senior leaders after the fall of the Soviet Union and said, the old Cold War is over. America has defeated the Soviet Union, but the new Cold War is now beginning, and China will defeat the United States. So they've been at war with us for the last 29 years, you know, and when your enemy is at war with you, then you're probably at war, whether you want to be or not.
You know, that's another thing that I learned from the book, and there's a whole lot more than you and I are going to be able to cover. So I would encourage people to buy the book. I guess they can get it on Amazon. I'll tell you what I do. I bought both the audio version and the written version because I like listening to books, because I can do that sometimes when I can't sit down and read a book. And then I like having the book itself so I can read it as well and study different passages. So folks need to get the book. Is that the best place to get it, through Amazon, or do you have any place else that you would recommend people to go?
Well, Amazon is convenient, and it's audiobook or paperback or hardcover, or Kindle, of course. We have some copies in our offices at the Population Research Institute. The website for Population Research Institute is pop.org, P-O-P.org. I'm a POP. I have 9 children, but the POP in POP.org is short for Population Research Institute. I got involved in this when I was investigating the one-child policy many years ago, and That's where the population comes from.
And so it's not about population control. It's about the people who are using population control to try to control us. But look, we've got to get into COVID-19. And I don't know how much more time you have. I'd love to be able to have you stay and answer some questions if you have the time. But let's talk about COVID-19, because there's a debate going on right now. Some in America and certainly China saying, don't blame China. It has nothing to do with China, and it's a naturally occurring virus. And I don't know. None of us really knows exactly how this happened, but we're told that there's growing evidence that it came out of a laboratory in Wuhan. I guess the question you could answer is, would such a thing be consistent with what you know about what is really Chinese policy?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would say, as someone who can read, write, and speak Chinese, and so who's been reading some things that have leaked out of China in the Chinese language, and also as someone who went through a PhD program in biology many, many years ago, that I believe, looking at the genetic sequencing of this coronavirus, I believe that it does show some unusual insertions. That is, people were tinkering with it and trying to make it more deadly and infectious. So I believe it was created in the lab. It was leaked to their streets in Wuhan, and then it was deliberately seeded around the world. So from the get-go, it is their responsibility every step of the way. It is their missteps and cover-up and all the rest that constitutes criminal behavior, and the communist Chinese regime must pay
Stephen,
for that criminal behavior.
Are you able to stay for another segment and answer questions? I hate to put you on the spot. Can you?
I'd be happy to stay with
okay.
you.
Okay, all right, great. Folks, just stand by. The number, well, you all have the number. We'll be back in a moment.
I've been thinking a lot in the midst of this pandemic on how the church has always thrived when things go terribly wrong throughout church history.
Pastor Jay Pathick on Focus on the Family Minute.
The church has survived and thrived through wars and famines and epidemics of all kinds. And so in a very real way, this is our moment. You know, it's a moment to wake up and remember who we were always meant to be, you know, especially when so many of the programs that we've depended upon, you know, the Sunday services and the classes and the things that we've been great at over time, those are taken from us. So this is a moment for us to get to the most basic parts of our faith, where we love God and we love people around us, because we're the front line. Your neighbors really are your first responders. So this is our moment for the church to rise up and be who we're meant to be.
More about being a better neighbor at familyminute.org.
It's always important to know the issues of today.
We have a problem in this country with illegal immigrants who are here committing crimes.
It's also important to know how to manage your finances.
Anytime you get into the market, you have to get in extremely committed.
It's even more important to study and explore God's Word.
It is faith. That means trust. Faith in Jesus that saves.
You hear all of this every day
on AFR.
And if you want to hear it again, just visit the podcast page at AFR.net. American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Well, folks, I've got an exciting program going here today because we've got author Stephen W. Mosher. He has got four decades of experience with living in, working in China, studying them, speaks the language, understands them in a way that most Americans, I dare say most American politicians, don't have a clue. And I want to give him an opportunity to answer your questions because I could interview him all day long. I find this stuff fascinating and eye-opening. The number is 888-589-8840. We want to come straight to your questions. I'd ask you all so that we can get as many questions in and as many answers as we can. If you would just keep your questions brief, really appreciate that. Again, 888-589-8840. Let's go first to Richard in Texas. Richard, welcome.
Yes, sir. I'm honored to be speaking to you, sir.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, you know, some facts that aren't being spoken besides showing the high incidence of people who are carriers that have been exposed. 50% of the people that are testing positive in Iceland, I don't know if you know about that study, are asymptomatic. There's five countries that are free. We're not one of them. And those countries are experiencing the same pandemic like Singapore, Hong Kong, and those death rates are very low, and they have open societies with free schools, open restaurants. I've traveled to China twice. We have an adopted daughter from China, and so I understand what is happening in China, what the culture is in China, and I agree. But I'm a doctor in Texas, and I can tell you what, treating COVID patients here, none of my patients are dying. And I can tell you what the problem is. It's a obstacle to testing and an obstacle to treatment based on man-made, manufactured, incorrect guidelines from the CDC, which are quoting the World Health Organization, which is coming from China. Filtered communist China information is going to the World Health Organization, to the CDC, and being pushed on Americans.
All right, Richard, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. So basically, what that goes to that issue of, and I don't know how China got so much control and influence over the World Health Organization, but that's part of their strategy, isn't it, Stephen?
Well, it is. Their strategy is to control international organizations. I should say just momentarily that I congratulate Dr. Richard on having adopted a little girl from China. Every little girl adopted from China is a life saved, because otherwise they might be left to die by the side of the road. So that's a life saved, and I'm sure a life introduced to our Christian faith as well. So back to the World Health Organization. Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, is China's guy. He was supported by China and its allies for the top position as director of the World Health Organization. He's not a medical doctor at all. He's a member of the ruling communist junta in the country, African country of Ethiopia, which has received billions and billions of dollars in Chinese aid over the years as part of their Belt and Road Initiative. So he's been a collaborator with China for a long time, and he's been doing China's bidding throughout this epidemic, covering up human-to-human transmission and continuing, I think, to propagate China's lies about the number of infections, the number of deaths around the world. So, China is criminally liable, I think, for the deaths and infections that it has caused around the world. But the World Health Organization needs to be cleaned up as well, and we're well quit of it until you fire the entire upper echelon of the organization.
Yeah, and given the fact that the United States is spending so much more money on the World Health Organization than China is, it's kind of hard to understand how it is that we end up on the receiving end of all the negative stuff, and China ends up in control. But that's that deception and that strategy of just insinuating yourself and taking over. Like you said earlier, they declared war on us, but we haven't declared war on them. And right now, there are indications that they may be winning. Let's go to the next question. Louise in Virginia. Louise in Virginia. Louise, welcome.
Yes. Praise the Lord, everybody. Peace and blessings to you, Bishop.
Thank
I'm calling
you.
From Richmond, Virginia. Yes, my question to the expert is, the information that he has given to us, has our President Trump and Vice President Pence and Attorney General Barr, have they been made aware of this information, or how can this information get to them?
All right. Thank you, Louise.
Well, by every means possible, we need to make Americans aware of the criminal responsibility that China bears. I've been working on this day and night, as you can imagine, for the last 4 months. I was saying back in January, it was pretty lonely out then. Senator Tom Cotton and I and a couple of others were saying that this leak from a lab, that was the most likely explanation. I got banned from Facebook and fact-checked by left-wing fact-checkers, one of whom was actually working for the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So that's a really independent fact-checker, right? Someone who worked for the very lab that created the coronavirus and leaked it out on the street. I was the one who said that my article was factually incorrect. So I've been in contact with people in the administration. I have friends who work there in the China area. And look, Secretary of State Pompeo just said on Sunday that there is overwhelming evidence that this leaked from a lab. And then he was asked whether it was created in the lab. And first he said, yes, it was, and then he said no. So obviously he's still agnostic on that question. But I would point out this. We've heard a lot about Dr. Anthony Fauci during the course of this epidemic in the United States. Dr. Fauci was the one who approved, back in 2015, a $3.7 million grant to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So I don't think he is an objective witness when questions like, did it leak from a lab, are being asked, because he was the one who approved the grant to that lab. And look, if it leaked from that lab or if it was engineered in that lab, then, he hasn't got just egg on his face. He's got the whole omelet.
Yeah, well, that's the discussion about Dr. Fauci is a whole other discussion that needs to be had. Okay, let's keep taking questions, though. Let's go to Angela in Louisiana. Angela, welcome.
Oh, yes, thank you so much. And first of all, that was an excellent question the lady just asked, and I do hope that President Trump can get this information that we're getting. My question is sort of twofold. First of all, so from what you've said, Doctor, the fact that people in China were eating bats, consuming bats from that market, had absolutely, would you say, didn't have anything to do with this spread? Is this correct? The consumption of bats was not really a factor.
Okay, thank you, Angela.
That's right. There were, first of all, there were no bats. It's called the intermediate horseshoe bat. That's the common name of the species. There were no intermediate horseshoe bats or bats of any kind being sold in the wet market in downtown Wuhan. So the idea that someone ate an infected bat, and that's where the infection came from, that's where the virus passed from a bat to a human being, is a cover story made up by the Chinese Communist Party when it realized that one of its engineered coronaviruses had leaked out and was infecting large numbers of people. So there's simply no credence to that story. Now, there were a lot of bats in Wuhan, but they weren't in the wet market. They were in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They were in the Wuhan Center for Disease Control Lab, located a couple miles away. And I'll tell you, there were thousands of bats in those labs being used for experiments, and they were also being used as sources for these coronaviruses because the bats carry a lot of coronaviruses. And so the coronavirus was being extracted from the bat, isolated in the lab, and then they were being using what's called recombinant technology. One coronavirus was being combined with another one, was being combined with other coronavirus parts from other species. That's what they were doing in the lab. That's what we were funding with a research grant from the National Institutes of Health. Of course, there was also research that was being done secretly that we didn't know about in that same lab, but we should never have been funding it in the first place. Let me just say one more thing about the lab. It was built by the French in February of 2017 on the understanding that if the French transferred the technology to China, highly sensitive technology, that the French would be able to allowed to stay there and do research. 50 French researchers were supposed to stay in that lab, keep an eye on their Chinese colleagues, and collaborate on research. As soon as the ribbon-cutting ceremony was over in February 2017, all of the French were sent packing. The agreement that China had signed with the French was torn up, and China went ahead and did what it wanted to with that lab.
Wow. You know what, Stephen? I'm going to get in touch somewhere down the line, not too distant future. I hope you can find the time to come on and devote an entire hour to this. I would recommend to people get the book, The Bully of Asia, Stephen W. Mosher, M-O-S-H-E-R. You will find it to be one of the most fascinating and informative things you've ever read. And China's right at the center of everything that's going on right now in our country. Because we didn't have a chance, Stephen, to talk about princelings. I wanted to get into that one, too, because you deal with that in your book, how China, part of its strategy is to buy off politicians by right. funding, doing business deals with princelings. And that gets us right into the whole Biden issue. But unfortunately, we are out of time. Stephen W. Mosher, thank you so much for taking time. This has been a great, great interview. Please come back again.
I look forward to it, Bishop.
All right. Thank you. Folks, look, we're going to keep trying to bring you cutting-edge information from the best experts we can get our hands on, and this is one. So, look, you all keep praying for us as a network. Pray for my program. Pray for me, because we know we're hitting on stuff, folks, that makes a lot of people angry, but the truth will make you free. And remember this, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
faith, family, freedom.